You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Hello, welcome to another edition of the Daily Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this is being recorded in the early hours of the 8th of May, 2025. You know, I've been writing about the state of the American military for a long time. I come from a military family, although I was never a part of it. My father very much didn't want it. But I do it as a political scientist, as a historian. And it started because for so long, really after 1990, but especially after 9/11, the regime has been telling us that no nation could defeat the U.S. on land, sea, or air. And the childlike mentality of so many in the military, that mind continues to fall into this trap. Well, that may be changing. Politicians, the media, deliberately misleading the increasingly cynical public at the condition of the military, especially its Navy. The Navy is of critical importance when you're dealing with overseas engagements, especially in the Pacific. The Navy is central to American foreign policy. Without a Navy, you can't have an empire. It's that simple. I've quoted the retired Turkish Admiral Cem Gurdens, however you pronounce it, recently retired from the Turkish Navy. Of course, that's a NATO state, and his position is very clear. The U.S. does not have the naval or air assets to defend its empire, and it doesn't have the industrial assets to do anything about it. Now, I've talked about this in many different angles, but today I want to do just two. The Littoral Combat Ship Program, the LCS, and the Zumwalt Destroyer Program, two very expensive but also very humiliating debacles that have come from the American rush to try to even begin answering China's dominance on sea. The general public doesn't know the abysmal shape of the American military, especially if the Navy is so expensive. It's the most expensive branch. It's the most high tech, but that is also critical for any kind of force projection. You know, unless it's Mexico, and even if it is Mexico, the Navy is essential. Its main programs have been failures, and billions have been wasted. We live under a Jewish oligarchy, so for 40 years or so, the deindustrialization of the U.S. for short-term gain has substantial military consequences. I said the U.S. is neither a superpower nor an industrialized society. It's very easy to demonstrate. You can't have an economy based on debt and derivative schemes for very risky short-term profits and not production and claim to be a first-world society. But everything the average American believes about the world, especially about his own country, is false. The normie world is an entirely invented one. I said a long time ago, and I'll repeat it, the United States is the first empire that can suffer through an extended economic depression and military collapse without its citizens even knowing. To them, the U.S. is the dominant power in the world. It's barely the dominant power in the U.S. So, the late 1990s, the U.S. Navy shifted its focus into coastal warfare. That's what the littoral ship is supposed to do. Cruisers and destroyers, of course, were of no use in littoral waters. The first attempt was a DD-21 under Captain Wayne Hughes and Vice Admiral Arthur Sabrowski. Their plan was for a 1,000-ton specialized, you know, small but heavily armed vessel costing just $90 million, which would be like $160 million today. And it actually was a disposable ship, a ship that could be abandoned once it suffered serious damage, and it was eventually rejected. That was the first attempt at this kind of a thing. And Donald Rumsfeld, under Bush, became Secretary of Defense. He was told to pursue cost savings without reducing combat readiness. In 2001, Sabrowski, the same guy, became the chief of the Pentagon's new Office of Force Transformation, abolished in 2006. The DD-21 was canceled, and it was replaced with the LCS, the Littoral Combat Ship. The concept came about in 2003 to increase fleet size without overspending. The Littoral refers to a shallow water off a coastline, meaning that the ships can't draft very much. They have to be smaller. And, of course, they have a very close connection to land. So they're dealing with a lot of different types of operations. Something like a corvette, something between a corvette and a frigate. Smaller than a frigate, though. A lot of action against land targets without being destroyed somehow by land-based missiles. So this program began that same year with $15 billion without any rigorous analysis or even a clearly defined purpose. What I just said was very vague, but it was being promoted. You know, littoral threats, coastal threats were very important. Not to mention the American shipbuilding industry there was dying. It's pretty much dead now. But the LCS became a catch-all. They just kept adding missions and requirements to it. And eventually what they ended up with was a system that was just too complex and large to use. Not to mention expensive. So the original concept of a small, cheap, fairly simple coastal warship became much larger, a lot more expensive, far more complex, and with a smaller crew. And back then, you know, we're talking 2003, 2004, the concept of drones, the concept of automation, even AI was being talked about. But it was very optimistic that that's going to take the place of a crew. So they threw six different missions onto this ship. Submarine and mine hunting, intelligence, small craft combat, transport, like special forces or whatever, and anti-drug, anti-narcotics combat. Yeah, it could function in blue water missions, but and still carry a helicopter. 40 knots, top speed, and at most, now we're up to $220 million each. But the list of things that I just mentioned is, again, very optimistic. So the ship gets even larger. And then they said, well, what if we make it modular? That we could, like Mr. Potato Head, we could mix and match different, you know, a lot of empty space, and we rely on unmanned systems, which if you're in the U.S. military and back then and now, unmanned systems sounds really good. So modules would be for specific guns or drones. And when the contracts were awarded in 2004, none of these modules functioned outside of a lab. And really, the whole thing was a cover story. No one had any idea what was going to happen. But an experimental LCS in 2005 came out. And Lockheed Martin, General Dynamics, and Raytheon. So you have the three big, you know, the three dominant elements in the military-industrial complex submitted their design proposals. At the time, the Secretary of the Navy was Gordon England. He announced it would be, the first one would be USS Freedom, built at the Marinette, in Marinette, Wisconsin, on the Great Lakes. There was a couple different versions. General Dynamics had the USS Independence, which was built at the Austal shipyards in Mobile, Alabama. They also have they also work out of Singapore. And that was launched in 2008. Well, like a beta male on the first date, the media just fell over themselves with over-the-top predictions and wild compliments, laser weapons, and just, you know, overdoing it. They call these new ships tactical marvels. Combined speed, cost savings, and lethality, I should say. And they said, well, we don't have to worry because most of the missions will be performed by onboard drones. Like the Spartan Scout, which is a drone boat, earlier version of that. The remote mine hunting system. Or the Fire Scout, which looks like a mini helicopter, which by itself was a disaster, lasting only a few years. Well, with shrinking manpower and low morale, unmanned combat, again, sounds pretty good, but that was the goal back in 04-05. A goal of unmanned combat doesn't come from a position of strength. The littoral combat ship program is one of the worst disasters in the Navy's long history of disasters. The other one we'll get to in a minute, the Zumwalt, same thing. After they were launched, two of the ships suffered awkward and humiliating breakdowns almost the moment they were put to sea. Nothing seemed to work. Each ship, of course, as is always the case, cost more than twice the original estimate, and they never functioned. From 2008 to 2015, the LCS was an embarrassment. Now, I came across a very good paper, I can't believe it, from journalists at ProPublica in 2023. It was impressive, it was unique. I'm shocked that journalists were capable of this. The problem is that the paper was just a detailed version of what we already knew. Of what the military is, especially what the American military is under conditions of oligarchy, constantly being purged, highly politicized without being politicized. The brass constantly dismissed or ignored warnings about the ship's flaws. They were so image conscious, they couldn't have, there were so many failures, they couldn't keep it up. Republicans in Congress continued to fight to build more. Even as they broke down at sea and their weapon systems failed, the neocons were demanding more ships than the Navy wanted. Sometimes forgetting the U.S. has a minimal shipbuilding capacity. There were plenty of people at the time that didn't want to talk about the ship, didn't want to even visit them because they didn't want to hear anything. They didn't want to hear from ordinary sailors. Billions had already been spent at this point. Now we know this year the Defense Department asked Congress to approve $1 trillion budget. Now that's a minimum. I've talked about what the real budget is before. It's not just to be found in the Defense Department. Military budgets are all over the budget, so it's probably maybe a trillion and a third. And no one knows where this money goes. The Pentagon has wasted billions in taxpayer money. The F-35 fighter is more than a decade late, $200 billion over budget. The disaster of the Gerald R. Ford, the aircraft carrier, still is semi-functional. Some of you may remember the Army's Future Combat System, abandoned in 2009 after $200 billion. This was supposed to be, it's 2003, it was a new brigade equipped with manned and unmanned vehicles, you know, Starlink-style flexible communications. It was even going to replace tanks with robotic armor. So the LCS was just one debacle out of many. You know, once you have a massive project with those companies, once it gains momentum and the money is already there, defense contractors start hiring. The politics gets very difficult. No one wants to throw in the towel. It's a sunk cost fallacy. The media was constantly talking it up, predicting a terrified Chinese military. Just, you know, they were repeating the slogans of Raytheon's or General Dynamics press releases as facts. Stopping a program is extremely humiliating. You're already admitting that enormous amounts of money has been wasted, and you're incompetent. The LCS, Zumwalt-class destroyer, it took an army of naval brass, several defense secretaries, to finally put a stop to it, and it has been canceled. You had ignorant members of Congress forcing the Pentagon to buy them, depending on how powerful the senators were, especially senators from Wisconsin and in Alabama. But the Navy eventually was forced to admit that the littoral combat ship was not suitable for fighting anyone. That's a quote. Let alone the huge and technically more advanced Chinese Navy. The LCS, according to an official naval statement, says, quote, does not provide the lethality or survivability needed in a high-end fight The Navy needs a more ready, capable, and lethal fleet more than a bigger fleet that's less ready, less capable, and less lethal. So it really was just to pad the Navy's numbers. The whole concept of, as the Navy shrinks, compared to what it was even just, 20 years ago, putting out these disposable ships, it looks good, at least on paper. The Government Accountability Office, now I've read some of these reports. That's another huge source of information on this. It's one of the most wasteful projects the Navy has ever stumbled into. The lifetime cost of this, according to the GAO, is about $100 billion or more, and the taxpayer received zero. The U.S. received tremendous humiliation. The GAO also has reported, very recently in fact, what I've been saying, that the Navy is struggling to maintain what it has in good condition. Overuse, lack of resources, poor personnel, and poor training. But it gets worse. The main problems, according to the Navy and the Government Accountability Office, shortage of spare parts, a shortage of qualified personnel, and delays in maintenance. Where is this money going? What little shipbuilding capacity the U.S. does have is not necessarily up to date. The two shipbuilding entities that I mentioned, they're civilian. They're capable of putting together a military ship, but they're not a military shipyard. The U.S. doesn't have any of those anymore. And they don't have the up-to-date equipment or qualified labor because the orders aren't coming in. According to the GAO and the U.S. Navy, the Navy received only about $1 billion of the $24.9 billion requested for maintenance between 2020 and 2023. So, starting in December 2015, five of the littoral combat ships broke down across the globe, each one because of a different set of problems. The USS Freedom was the third one. The USS Milwaukee stalled in Virginia. It's supposed to go, by the way, to the South China Sea, where the U.S. has no right to be. Had another breakdown on the way. The USS Fort Worth with another. It had a search and rescue deployment, really not non-military, struggling for crews, a lot of rotation, a lot of burnout. In November of 2015, in the Fort Worth, a new inexperienced crew took over. Captain Michael Atwell, who was totally untrained on the ship. Around that time, hundreds of gallons of fuel spilled into the ship's engine room. Sailors had to spray chemical foam to keep it from igniting. So the Fort Worth had to pull into port into Singapore for a week of repair, very expensive repairs. But there, now these ships had been around at this point for a few years. It was clear that these ships had been operated incompetently. Leaks were everywhere. The engines were in bad shape in all of them. Electric generators were semi-functional, and the crews were exhausted and really not well trained on this stuff. The officers and the captain said there's no assistance from the Navy. They were told the resources just didn't exist. In 2016, there was supposed to be a high visibility visit to Hong Kong, and Atwell was pressured to make it, believe it or not, without a breakdown, which was a big deal. And so to make that happen, the crew took all kinds of shortcuts. They did anything they could just to kind of duct tape it to make it usable again. One of the sailors in the engine room didn't lubricate the combining gears. I mean, it damaged them very badly. And so another 6 or 7 months, I think it was 7 months, waiting for replacement parts. The Navy blamed the captain, calling him unfit for command. But the breakdowns at the Milwaukee and the Fort Worth, that's just the very beginning of the descent of this program. Ships were rushed to sea with faltering equipment. Shorthanded, undertrained or untrained crews and captains tried to make them work. Looking for scapegoats as always. Well, its reputation was already in the gutter. And this is supposed to be the new ship of the future, right? We're going to answer China. Well, they had one chance left to redeem its reputation, and that's RIMPAC, the Pacific Rim naval exercises, naval games in Hawaii and California. That was in the summer of 2016. The Freedom was supposed to be there. Now, the Freedom was there to show that the program wasn't a disaster. It was there to show, destroy underwater mines with its mission there. It was the first LCS ever built. It had to do well. If it didn't do well here, the U.S. was yet again going to be humiliated. During the exercises, dozens of pieces of equipment were under repair. At least one of its engines, which, by the way, wasn't working at the time of the... It had four. Training was far more difficult than anticipated, never really done. The sailors never actually passed any exams on the newer aspects of the ship's systems, the high-tech systems. So, July 7th of 2016, these equipment failures forced the captain to issue a fail-to-sail message, which, again, was humiliating. Parts of the propulsion system had to be replaced. You know, this is how bad it is. They discovered one near Port Huneme, whatever, H-U-E-N-E-M-E, a port just, it's in L.A. So the engineer had to rent a car, go through 5 hours of Southern California traffic, pick up the part, and bring it back to the ship. That's how bad off they are. I don't know if he had to use his credit card or what, but that's what... So somehow they were able to, again, duct taping it. As they approached Mexican waters, they realized the ship. The captain said, "This doesn't sound right." They turned around. She was sent back. The naval brass yelled at him for holding up the mission. He was right, because on the 11th of July, a leak erupted inside the main engine room, spraying the electrical system with seawater. They plugged the hole somehow, but you know, when you plug one hole, it bursts out somewhere else. It destroyed a rubber seal that kept seawater out of the ship's lubrication system. So water was mixing with the oil, and the result, that goo, was forced through the ship's engines. So now it really had to return to dock. The chief engineer said, "You're talking 2 weeks worth of repairs." The Navy said, "No. We have to go to the rim of the Pacific exercise, RIMPAC. We have to show the world that we're not totally incompetent." RIMPAC had warships from around the globe, hundreds of them. 30 countries. The main players, of course, being, other than the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Australia, Japan, and Korea. The Freedom, the USS Freedom, was a representative of the littoral combat ship program. The admirals made it clear that Freedom's participation in RIMPAC was critically important to the Navy's reputation. "And I don't care what you have to do, you get there and you make it work." And people were talking about the Fort Worth and the Milwaukee, what happened just a few months earlier. The program has to be saved at all costs. The contractors, so you know, the people who built it, rushed the repairs as quickly as they possibly could. There's still water inside the engine, but it was forced out of port anyway. So what they ended up doing is using three engines out of the four. And no one really told, because you know, they didn't want to get yelled at again. So you had contaminants all over the engines, and so no one told them that. You know, the admirals would show up on their ship, and they would visit, and they were told whatever they needed to be told. One engine was totally out of commission. And the captain said, "Well, three is okay. It's going to be difficult, but not impossible." So the Freedom did actually show up and do semi-okay. It was functioning normally as far as anyone knew. So 5 days after it was over, there was an inspection and it revealed severe damage to the engines and corrosion so extensive that the ship was docked in repairs for 2 years. The entire system needed to be replaced. Rust was everywhere. Okay, this is one of the Navy's most advanced new ships. Spent the next 2 years under repairs. Millions of dollars. It took months for them to figure out the problem. Again, the program was eventually canceled. And there's nothing to replace it, really. I guess a Constellation. This is humiliation. Where does it come from? 1975, American shipbuilding was dominant, as you might expect. 50 years later, the U.S. is now 21st or 19th, depending on how you figure it, in shipbuilding capacity in the world. In the early 90s, the demand for warship kind of decreased. Submarine production fell. Demand started to increase again in the 2000s, but the industry was gone by that point. They're not just going to stay open because maybe in the future you guys were going to order something. The Navy wants more ships, but the shipyards aren't there. China controls almost 70% of all new ship orders in the world. The Naval Intelligence Directorate, the American ONI, said that the China's merchant ship construction capacity is 232 times greater than that of the U.S. In other words, 33,200,000 tons the Chinese can produce, the U.S. only 100,000. China builds all the machinery, the electronic systems, the weapons, everything is domestic. They're not dependent on anybody. It is state-owned. It's not a for-profit matter, just like in Russia. The Secretary of the Navy, the previous one, Carlos Del Toro, said China can produce in 1 year as many ships as the U.S. can produce in 7 years, which I think is very generous to the Americans. There were 11 military shipyards in the U.S. in the 50s. Today, zero. I mentioned the two civilian shipyards. There are five more. They could produce larger ships. The number in China, 1,100. How many American kids want to, well, you know, this is why the trades are so important. Shipyard welders, plumbers, this kind of thing. Many of us grew up being told that these kind of jobs, well, that's for dumb kids. I was told that. It's not true. I was told that. Worse, outsourcing was short-sighted, of course. Everything we predict always comes true. And when you outsource these things, domestic knowledge then atrophies. And that's the core of the issue. This is what oligarchy does. This is the irrational result of short-term self-interest from a handful, a tiny handful, of plutocrats. So after the USS Freedom failed, another one, USS Coronado, broke down on its way to Singapore. The breakdowns were, you know, to expect one of these ships to not break down was just unrealistic. A coupling failed, the connection between the engine and the propeller shaft, the power transmitter. So the propulsion system, which is probably overly complicated to begin with, was non-functional. This turned out to be a class-based problem. The Coronado, actually, as the GAO found out, failed to sail six times in a year. And listen to this. Because it didn't have the correct parts on board to fix simple problems. Important items like circuit card assemblies, washers, bolts, gaskets, and parts for air conditioning units were not on board. The LCS may not even have adequate space on board to stock these items. Washers and gaskets? That's what they didn't have? So in 2016, the Navy ordered a stand down on all of these new ships. A fifth one, USS Montgomery, had another series of mishaps. In 2 months, its engine malfunctioned, it collided with a tugboat, and it cracked its hull after striking a lock in the Panama Canal. This is pretty normal. The Navy didn't want any more. This is now 2017, the first Trump administration. Well, then you have the corruption. Tammy Baldwin, senator from Wisconsin, wanted more. Well, if these were built on the Great Lakes in Wisconsin, then yeah, the senator may want this. Not because it's rational, but she didn't want the shipyard to lay off people. It's her state. So she wrote to Donald Trump on May 12th as a Democrat, talking about all this nonsense, the rare opportunity for us to work together. You want American workers making American products. She said, if there's no more orders of these LCS ships, then or LCS, then the shipyard's going to lay off hundreds of workers, maybe disappear. So the Trump administration inserted one more ship order into the budget after it had already been sent to Congress, now at $500 million apiece. The Navy didn't ask for this and was going to eliminate it anyway. Baldwin was proud to represent Wisconsin shipbuilding industry. She pretended to know stuff, you know, provides new capabilities and capacity for the Navy. This is typical for a politician to function under oligarchy, pushing for a failed program for the sake of her shipyard. It's not her fault. It's the system's fault. Congress funded even more useless ships. There were 35 total, more than the Navy needed. The additions cost taxpayers in the billions, and none of them worked. In the years since then, they've continued to suffer with major problems. Half of those 35 have cracks in the hulls, which is a pretty significant issue. There was a flaw in the combining gear, as I mentioned already, that affects the entire class of ships. The Navy engineer's fix was $8 million to $10 million a ship, which in reality means like $30 million a ship. Lockheed Martin, I don't know if they were sued for this, but Lockheed Martin was going to split it with them, even though it's their fault. So you have these politicians. The media is still, by the way, talking about it as the ship of the future. They're just putting them out of service almost as soon as they get on. In March of 2022, the Navy is going to retire 9 of the littoral combat ships because they couldn't do anything. So, you know, the senators and congressmen from those states fought for more of these ships to be made anyway, regardless of the fact that they were now dangerous. The Navy decommissioned 4, and of those 4, they were 4 years old. The rest, by the way, had been put out of service at this point. They're supposed to have like a 25 to 30 year lifespan. And the oldest of these ships was 9 when it was put out. Nothing came out of this. It was pure and utter humiliation. This isn't just corruption. This is a national incompetence. This is the irrational political economy of oligarchy. This is a twisted social system. Yeah, DEI is important. Of course it is. Competence is not the reason you want to hire someone in under this system. So, let's move to the Zumwalt class, a destroyer. Another example of the Navy's decline into madness and utter incompetence. I remember when I first saw a picture of the USS Zumwalt. It was designed to look like something out of Star Trek. I said at the time, if you were friends on Facebook when I used to have a Facebook account, I said, this is just pure overcompensation. The media to this day calls it the ship of the future. Both classes, they use the same phrases. Of course, they don't know anything. It's larger. Of course, it's a destroyer, so it's larger than the littoral coastal ship. It did come out of the same DD-21 prototype, though. Now, the Navy thought that the Zumwalt was going to be the successor of the Spruance destroyer, a few other classes. The initial media coverage was laudatory. Chinese are shaking in their boots. So with borrowed money, I mean, the R&D alone was almost $3 billion a ship. The figure's never really public. It was $3 billion over budget before the first one ever even hit the water. They claim actually is more like $5 billion. But with compound interest and training and maintenance, it's a $15 billion overrun. If you look, and I'm using a picture of the Zumwalt for the picture, you know, for the description in this post. It's a compensatory device. The Navy doesn't own a square foot of this ship. It's all borrowed money. The U.S. can't defeat the Chinese Navy. Maybe it's to challenge them, but if you know, it's not really meant. The littoral ship had nothing to do with foreign policy. It was a shallow water ship. So either it's built for a war with Russia or China, or it's just a pathetic display. And I said at the time, well, Medicaid is broke, but at least the Burmese Navy knows its place. So Zumwalt's supposed to be, this is going to be different, right? The U.S. Navy commissioned the warship, the Zumwalt itself. And the media went crazy about the two huge guns that could hit targets 80 miles away. Well, they were canceled. The guns were too expensive, the Navy said. Or more accurately, the ammunition was too expensive. Each projectile, each shell was $800,000 per round, which means in reality was more like $1,500,000 per round. But the design of these guns made them unable to fire the standard NATO 155mm round. So the Navy had to build their own special ammunition. That's where the high cost came from. Now, this was the long-range land attack projectile, LRLAP. That was the whole point of the Zumwalt class, to support land operations. So this, too, wasn't really meant as a blue water operation. So none of these have anything to do with any extensive foreign policy goals. You take a look at the Zumwalt class, or the only, you know, the one ship that's well known, the Zumwalt itself, USS Zumwalt, it's designed to look futuristic. It's actually quite similar in mission to the LCS. But it was said that at the time that the guns could hit targets, and I'm quoting here, can defeat targets in the urban canyons of coastal cities with minimal collateral damage. But who said that? Well, it was the weapons designer. It was Lockheed Martin said that about itself. It was too costly. Then the planned number of the Zumwalt class was cut, no different than the LCS. Supposed to be 30 ships, but by 2017, it was reduced to 3, and then just the one. Just the USS Zumwalt itself. Oh, but then we were told that it's going to be fitted with hypersonic missiles. That's the problem. Well, the U.S. doesn't have hypersonic missiles. It can't produce them. It's lagging so far behind technology in these areas. All the American hypersonic tests have failed. North Korea uses hypersonic weapons. The U.S. does not have them. But the media continues to claim that these new weapons have been delayed. They don't exist, but they say that they're delayed. I did an entire show on the hypersonic projectiles, missiles. Back in 2022, the test ended in failure. There's a litany of failed hypersonic tests from the U.S. The conventional prompt strike missile program, which was the second kind of gun that was going to be put on the Zumwalt class destroyer. As of this, there are no American hypersonic weaponry. The media has deliberately misled, saying that, it's being outfitted for hypersonic missiles. And it's not just the Zumwalt, many other ships are saying that, implying that they actually exist when they, in fact, do not. The official media in the U.S. claim that this hypothetical, purely theoretical hypersonic missiles intended to have the range of a nuclear ICBM, but be purely conventional. The Russian version, which is, you know, then used in China, had 2,000 mile ranges, Mach 10 speed. They've used it. Russians have used it in Ukraine. There's nothing you could do about it. You can't intercept it. And the kinetic energy is extraordinary when it hits, which is really great for anti-ship stuff. So, you know, they're still going on and on about the hypersonics that the U.S. simply doesn't possess. Now, the Zumwalt itself continued to fail over and over again. So, almost like every week, they came up with a new thing for the Zumwalt to do. The first gun was a bust. The second one doesn't exist. So now they want to give it a intercontinental normal missile, using it at a very safe distance. Which makes it no different than any other ship they could have made. They claim it's a stealth ship. It is not. The ship turned out to be absolutely useless, not to mention far more expensive than what the media reported. Doesn't matter. The journalists and politicians will continue to parrot these numbers. I think early on they said that each ship would be $1.34 billion. And the media reported it as if that matters. Of course they're going to give a lowball number. The first increase was now each one was going to be $8 billion. And it continued to rise. The entire program was going to go over $25 billion. The Navy was nowhere near capable of affording that. So the Zumwalt class, the littoral combat ship, lies were used to buttress more lies, and the taxpayer received nothing. Now only one of these ships was ever created. Commissioned in 2016, one of the Zumwalt broke down in the Panama Canal, just like the other one, just like the LCS, a very public humiliation. There was the other ones, they didn't pass their sea trials, so they never were commissioned. I'm talking about they only had one commission ship. the USS Michael Mansour failed entirely. And Military Watch magazine said that they suffer from poorly functioning weapons, stalling engines, and an underperformance in their stealth capabilities, among other shortcomings. What did the media say? Back in 2013, the Christian Science Monitor's headline read, "Navy new destroyer, USS Zumwalt is bigger, badder than any other destroyer." It even says that laser weapons could be added to it in the future to counter China's burgeoning naval might. Business Insider's headline was, "The U.S. Navy's most intimidating creation just hit the water." They even ran a story that somehow the Zumwalt rescued a fisherman off the coast of Maine. And I refuse to believe that the name of the captain, James C. Kirk, is a coincidence. It is not. So the Zumwalt has never been used. It had a total absence of anti-ship missiles, anti-submarine torpedoes, long-range air defense missiles. The usefulness of the ship ended up zero. Everything that they tried failed miserably. Then the entire project was canceled. The one and only ship in its class, the Zumwalt itself, still is under repair in Mississippi. So the Government Accounting Office, they put it very succinctly. Together, these two ship classes consumed tens of billions of dollars, more to acquire than initially budgeted, and ultimately delivered far less capability and capacity to fleet users than the Navy had promised. They're being very diplomatic about it. But these disasters are normal events now. This is a very sad story of American decline. The U.S. now is an unstable regional hegemon. The GAO, you know, was lecturing the Navy. You know, it could improve your ship design and shipbuilding processes. You need to adopt different techniques. Talking about the disasters of the littoral combat ship, the Zumwalt, and the Constellation class frigates, which was supposed to be the replacement for the LCS. They published something called Navy Shipbuilding, Enduring Challenges, Call for Systemic Change. March of 25, this year, the GAO said the Navy has not increased the number of ships in its fleet over the last 20 years, despite the near doubling of its shipbuilding budget. Well, it's because all of these ships were failures, every last one. We're talking 20 years here. Every ship was a failure. This isn't corruption. This is beyond incompetence. This is a dying regime. I don't use these terms or phrases. I don't use these loosely. I don't use these as, you know, clickbait like the other idiots do. I know exactly what I'm talking about here. Even the Constellation, I don't know as much about it as do the other ones, but the GAO was almost making fun of them. Construction had begun before the design was even completed. Of course, it's 3 years behind schedule. And it's almost like the GAO is talking to the Navy like they're 5 years old. It said, speaking to the Navy, it said, "You can't expect to look within your own playbook for answers." Meaning that you don't know what you're doing. It's a very nice way of saying that. You need to look at industry-leading companies worldwide. In other words, we don't have the capacity here. Using the word erratic doesn't even capture it. Since 2015, the GAO has made 90 recommendations for the Navy to improve its shipbuilding acquisition practices and outcomes, and zero have been followed, partially because of wounded pride, just like the whole LCS thing with the RIMPAC. You know, they didn't care. They didn't care if the thing, you know, they were risking a disaster. It had to be out there, even if it was dangerous to sail. But beyond that, the existing assets, money, manpower, they don't exist to fix anything. The fleet is shrinking, and what they have is barely functional. They could count on, in terms of combat readiness, you're talking 35 to 40%. Even the Columbia-class ballistic missile submarine, hundreds of million dollars now over budget, and a couple of years already delayed. Every single program. So what's the upshot of all this? The U.S. Navy is incompetent. Her fleet is shrinking. Morale cannot be very high. You can't really audit the Pentagon since there's no records. You have people like Marco Rubio demanding more wars, more aggression in various places, apparently under the impression that the U.S. is a superpower that could do what it pleases abroad, even against first world powers. This is the ignorance that could be deadly. When Iran launched its retaliatory strike on October 1st of last year, the U.S. was only able to find three Aegeus-class destroyers with some air defense capability in the Eastern Mediterranean. That's a demonstration of weakness. What's the full fleet? On paper, it's 297 ships, which includes 60 auxiliary ships for supplies and support. How many deployed? Well, 76 combat and 30 auxiliary. Only 71 of those, total 106 were actually functional. So a huge portion of the Navy doesn't work. These ships are overused. They're being shuffled from place to place. Its crews are exhausted from constant missions. Their number continues to dwindle. If a guy had to get into his car and drive 3 hours to get a spare part, could you imagine the condition? That's what it was based on. Poor, all these years, all these now trillions of dollars spent, and this is the level of combat readiness. Unless the Americans shut down its overseas bases, there is no hope for improvement. The Navy admits, and I think this is probably high, a combat readiness figure of under 40%. Which means, you know, that's what can be put into warfare at any given moment. Even those in the reserve fleets, their average age is 40 years old and in very bad condition. Crews are in danger. So politicians, and especially the clueless journalists, they either are too ignorant or they refuse to grasp the reality in front of them. The U.S. cannot project force. The U.S. cannot protect its empire. This was created by oligarchy, not a variant of capitalism, essentially rent-seeking. It has nothing to do with markets. That's what's created the situation. So if you know, these idiot talking heads have no conception of how an oligarchic system works economically, they're not going to understand anything. Offshoring, the destruction of American industry, that was for short-term profit. But it has real-world, long-term, and in this case, military consequences. So what's been, knowing all this and trying to process it, what does the American mind do? Well, on March 24th of this year, the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative concluded an investigation. Why is China's share in world shipbuilding? Well, why did it go from 5% in 1999 to more than half of all ships in 2023? How could that be? Well, the only thing it came up with was it's because they're subsidized by the state, which is not an answer. So the policy now is the regime has to attack China's dominance in shipbuilding. That's the new front. So the announcement has been that there's going to be a duty on Chinese-made and Chinese-owned ships docking at any American port starting April 17th, 2025. Well, actually, it was announced April 17th. It's going to take effect in the fall. And only affects either ships owned by or built by China. And the fees will be calculated on net tonnage per voyage. So regardless of who owns the ship or what flag it flies under, if it's built in China, it's going to be forced to pay something like $1.5 million in taxes whenever they call to a U.S. port. If a ship is operated by a Chinese ship owner, and the ship owner in question has ordered new ships from a Chinese shipyard, then it goes up to almost $4 million. That's the response to all this. That's the response. That's all the U.S. can do. Brute force, coercion, threats. That's pretty much the response. Chinese maritime power has to be harmed or destroyed. Try to isolate it. It's like a passive blockade. In other words, the U.S. is admitting it can't win. Now, what does this mean? It means in practice that the U.S. still might provoke a war that it knows it can't win. Certainly not to win it, but at least to go down in such a way that they pull a lot of things down with it. to inflict as much damage as possible on China, Russia, Iran, enough to harm her economy, to damage her economy, and of course to spread terror, whether through proxies or direct action. The point is to destroy as much as it can. I mean, victory is out of the question. That's beyond debate. That's been American policy against Russia. From the very beginning, it was clear that the American proxies can't win. So the point isn't to win. It's just to throw more bodies into the meat grinder to do as much damage to Russia as humanly possible. It doesn't matter how many, now well over a million servicemen have died. These boys have been forced to the front. So there's nothing new about that. A direct use of military power in a lost war is extremely dangerous politically. The only option would be the nuclear option, and that's a completely different step. Of course, we can't put it past the regime. They'll slaughter half the planet. They don't care. The millions they've already murdered just in the last few years. We've talked about it on this show ad nauseum. So the point of a war wouldn't be to win it. It would be to disrupt, to spread terror. You know, Israel's invasion of Lebanon, the end of last year, you know, they didn't do very much. They murdered mostly civilians. They destroyed the UN presence there. They attacked the entire medical establishment of the area. The point wasn't to defeat Hezbollah. They went underground. That wasn't an option. The point was to spread terror. That was pretty much the only purpose of the invasion of Lebanon. It's not an accident that they're attacking hospitals directly. That's policy. And that's life under oligarchy. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I am Matthew Raphael Johnson, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.